We're speaking to John Philpott, practices law on this many fields now to deal with state-to-state relations and the kind of wars and civil wars that have been the world's been witnessing in the past 10, 20 years. Now I guess we'd like to talk about Mangwan Joe, and we'd like to say that's probably should be put in the context of people who are peace advocates, because there's a growing anxiety about the possibility of a full breakdown of relations with the People's Republic of China, and probably the grossest moment that has caused, precipitated a crisis is the arrest of Mangwan Zhou, a Huawei financial officer, major figure in the Huawei company, at Vancouver Airport, the arrest made on behalf, at the request of the United States government. That arrest has had the obvious ugly consequence that trade has been damaged. Future of Huawei, and major employer actually in technology field in Canada, is probably kaput. John, talk about what do you find in this case? What happened to Mangwan Zhou at the airport in Vancouver? How extraordinary is that to you, and what is wrong? What is your comment on it?
Extradition in principle is very simple. US wants to arrest me for murder. They put out an indictment. They send a letter to Canada. They provide a summary of the evidence. I'm taken before the court. If the evidence is just a summary is enough, basically I'm sent to the US to stand trial. Now, the minister can stop at any time in the process, and he can stop it at the end of the process. The devil is in the details. Now, Mengwen Zhou, she arrived at the airport, and the indictment had been, the request had been filed the day before, and Canadian Border Services and the RCMP had meetings the night before and the morning before, planning on how to do it. And so what happened is she was interviewed by the Canadian border people, where she doesn't have a right to a lawyer. And they tricked her and got access to her electronic devices, apparently a phone and a computer. They asked her for the password. She gave the passwords, and they put them in I think it's a Faraday bag. It's a bag which has got made of lead or something, where the signals can't be transmitted. And
yes,
it was given by the FBI, and apparently it was handed over to the RCMP, who gave it to the FBI. They questioned her for almost 3 hours, and there was an arrest warrant in the RCMP. When they order somebody to be arrested, you arrest them. That's the job of a police force. They don't give them to another branch of Canadian government to question them. So this is a really serious breach of procedure, and the issue is it's a kind of abuse of process, which is an issue before the court. We know, for example, that since the warrant was issued in August 2018, she had traveled to 6 countries: Britain, Ireland, Japan, France, Poland, and Belgium. And the US had not requested extradition from these countries.
They all have treaties, do they not?
They all have treaties. They all have treaties. And even where she was going, to Mexico, Costa Rica, and Argentina on December 1st, they all have treaties. Trump said he's going to use it as a bargaining chip. Now, so these are serious issues, because it would appear that there's an abusive process, questioning her, getting the devices. There's some really interesting things that have come out The lawyers seem to be doing a very effective job, on this. When you want to extradite somebody, you provide a summary of the evidence. So they sent a series of, I think, 16 PowerPoint, small PowerPoint videos. It might be sufficient to satisfy the burden of proof. But the defense has found out they left out two videos, slides 6 and 16 of the meeting between her and the company with which she is supposed to have conspired or tried to avoid U.S. sanctions law. And so the evidence which has been furnished to justify extradition is dishonest, and the judge has allowed this error in the evidence or this fraudulent nature of the evidence, whatever way you want to, however you want to describe it, has allowed this to be brought into court. And this may be one of the ways to win the case. There's some very humorous, if it wasn't tragic. The Border Services man said, "Yeah, I gave the codes to the RCMP." And he said, "It was a heart-wrenching mistake." My God, they'd met the day before. They knew what they were doing. And let's hope the judges observed that this is obviously some kind of organization to try and organize, to get evidence from her, to get her material, to get her to talk without counsel. And this week, there's something really interesting which came out. There is a senior RCMP named officer who retired in 2019, whose name is Ben Chang. And he apparently refuses to testify, presumably for the government. I don't have all that information. And this gentleman in his affidavit said, "I didn't send anything to the US." But the police notes of one of his colleagues said, "Oh yes, Ben Chang sent this to the FBI." So there is a really big problem of contradictory evidence. And I mean, the government is trying to extradite somebody and they can't bring their witness who is working for them. This, it gives me the shivers to think about that. And so this is a very serious problem. Mm-hmm. There's another issue in evidence, which is that HSBC had been in big trouble with the US with respect to money laundering, and they may have been setting a trap for her when they met her and took this series of PowerPoint videos with her, these PowerPoint representations, because she was trying to explain that they had relations with Iran through another country called SkyCom, and HSBC apparently knew very well that SkyCom had close relationships with Huawei. I call it Huawei. Huawei. And so there is a kind of a conspiracy between this bank who's trying to do maybe buy some kind of curry some favor with the US.
Yes.
So.
By the way, isn't that a striking feature, this? I mean, it's people need to take a step back and look at it coldly. It's extraordinary. If you have a problem with a company, and governments do, and they often argue about their taxes or they argue about the doing things which are in violation of law, they bring the company into court, not an individual. The company is brought to court. They're represented, of course, by their counsel. And if they are shown to have done something out of the ordinary, by the way, in the case of HSBC, I think that's what happened. Their executives weren't arrested, and they agreed to pay a big fine.
Exactly.
Why isn't that done with Huawei? I guess, a Trump moment, because it's come out in Mr. Bolton's book, and as you indicated, the comment from Trump himself, he was just kind of playing games with the international law.
For sure. Even the extraterritoriality, I've seen the indictment. I have it here in my computer here. but they said that she committed the crime in New York State and elsewhere. What really happened? Whatever she did, it was done in Hong Kong at a meeting. And when there was some money transferred, it went through a server, which was in New York for a split second, you know, a transaction. And that's how they try and get jurisdiction. I mean, we'll see whether that is an important factor or not, but it is kind of surprising when things happened a long way away and had nothing to do with the US, but it may have gone through some kind of electronic server, just like our conversation could be passing through a server in France or in, we don't know where, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of information. And I think that people can, Cyrus Jansen, C-Y-R-U-S, Jansen, J-A-N-S-S-O-N, is very interesting. And Daniel Dumbrell is also very interesting. And I urge people to try and follow this because your brains are as good or if not better than ours. So mm-hmm. I really urge people to try and understand this. This is a big issue. And yes, the US and Canada.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
The US and Canada have got to get their minds clear that they're not dealing with a small, weak country. And they might learn from General MacArthur in October 1950, when he thought he was going to just march up through Korea into China and Russia. And suddenly China said no. Mm-hmm. And if they keep pushing on these things, it could send us into a very difficult situation, which we cannot allow happen.
Yeah. Well, actually, yes. And that's where we're, of course, now realizing that the political framework is going to probably determine what happens allegedly in an independent courtroom. That is, we have a new president, and there's a kind of quiet looking to see whether the Biden will pick up on the rather adventuristic approach Trump took. And then, at the bottom of this is a question of Canadian sovereignty. Very striking to me is that really important people in the Liberal Party and in the judiciary retired and diplomats retired, actually spoken out, reminding everyone that, Canada does have a degree of sovereignty. It claims to be an independent government. It has the right to say yes or no, no matter what somebody says about a treaty. Of all people, John, it was Louise Arbour who pointed this out. She was not so zealous what it had to do with other countries, but she did say that Canada and the justice minister can wash their hands of this if they want. If it's in the best interest of Canada, they can do it and they should do it.
They can do it today. They can do it at the end of the process, and they could have done it at the beginning of the process. Three times they have a chance.
Mm-hmm. We've been speaking to John Philpott, who practices international law and knows whereof he speaks. And we look forward, John, to that paper, which you presented to at the with the African Bar. We want to post that Taylor report, and we hope other people will be posting it as well. This is clearly now international law has become it's kind of a new way of discussing politics. Practically on every continent, we're having legal cases with profound political significance. Maybe I should ask you quickly at the end, we better say a man who needs to be freed is Julian Assange.
I try to follow that. Apparently in Belmarsh prison, there's a COVID outbreak these days. But John Filger and many people are writing about this and covering the trial and the abuse by the judge who's being treated. He's been put in a bullet, kind of a cage. He has very limited access to his counsel. He's had a terrible time preparing his case.
And there's nobody, people can't observe the trial. And he's kept in a strange prison situation where, by the way, they have a COVID issue. And Britain and the United States always advertise themselves as the vanguard of the best of everything, and particularly justice. But it really has almost a medieval quality, the Assange case.
I fully agree with you, Phil.
Well, it's been a great pleasure to talk to you, John Philpott. Thank you very, very much, John.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, and we'll be right back.